This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He's in his native Australia in Sydney. And we're turning to events in East Asia, events in the Western Pacific that are critical for the defense of the First Island Chain, which ends in Australia and New Zealand. The incident that is at issue here happened in the last week. Beijing-Manila row over collision of Chinese ships chasing Filipino boat. And the Straits Times adds, a reminder of geopolitical risk. For those that missed the original incident, it's on the video, you can see everywhere. A 7,500-ton destroyer warship for the People's Liberation Army Navy chasing a runabout for the Filipino Coast Guard that the Chinese ship believed was violating its sea space in the South China Sea, which is foolishness because it's about Scarborough Shoal that is Filipino water. In any event, the PLA Navy has enjoyed pressing its advantage these many years with swarms of fishing boats, with swarms of Coast Guard vessels, and now with a 7,500-ton warship chasing a Filipino Coast Guard runabout. At the same time, a Chinese Coast Guard vessel was attempting to block the Filipino boat. So it was two great big ships, one 7,500-ton, the other 1,500-ton, chasing a little runabout. The runabout made a video of this chase, and the 7,500-ton destroyer suddenly moves to cut off the bow of the Coast Guard vessel. There were three or four sailors in that bow right before the incident. They're gone. The front of the Coast Guard vessel is a stub. It didn't sink, but certainly the rescue efforts had to be momentous. We don't have that video. We have the collision. So I mention all this as evidence that China continues to bully whoever is in the way of the claim of South China Sea. Gregory, I go in at length about this. We've had collisions before. We've had the Chinese being aggressive like this before. But it took 2 days for China to explain this, blaming the Philippines for provocation. And then the U.S. Navy sent the USS Higgins through the 12-mile limit of Scarborough Shoals within 2 days. And Beijing really cranked up the propaganda then, declaring the U.S. provocative, unnecessarily so, in Chinese waters. Is this moving the story in any fashion, or is this the local Chinese commanders just being on watch and making noise wherever they can? Or is there something ahead that we need to watch out for?
Well, we're in a very delicate stage within the People's Republic of China right now, as we've discussed in the past. The fact that Xi Jinping has been shorn of all of his real power, and the PLA is operating separately from the Xi administration, and the Communist Party leadership itself is trying to present the image that the People's Republic of China and the Communist Party are all strong, united, and moving ahead, and history is on their side. The reality is that they know that this is not the case, but they are still waiting to sort out that internal situation and to find a way to announce that Xi Jinping is no longer in power. And that will probably happen in the next couple of months. But in the meantime, the whole apparatus, if you like, of the CCP and the People's Republic of China government underneath it has to be one of showing China still confident and strong. And part of this is this activity in the South China Sea is just that. You know, look tough. It's wolf warrior diplomacy at sea, if you like. And probably the local vessel commanders in the PLA Navy and the Coast Guard and other maritime units of the PRC have been told to look tough, take no nonsense, act as though this is our territory, and brook no opposition. As a result, you get inexperienced captains, like the captains of the Coast Guard vessel and the PLA Navy destroyer, acting in ways which were clearly embarrassingly unprofessional. And this whole incident has caused, instead of the PRC looking tough, they've been made to look ridiculous by this small boat, fast patrol boat of the Philippine Navy. This is the worst outcome that Beijing could have had, but they really are not in a position to do much about it at this stage because of this whole leadership and control problem which is plaguing the Communist Party of China right now. But they, again, continue to act tough, blame everybody else. The U.S. comes into the South China Sea, they're blamed. Anybody else comes in, they're blamed. So it's really showing the weakness, if you like, of the PLA and the whole Communist Party of China apparatus. They have to sort this out quickly. They're trying to, but that'll probably happen when the elders meet at the Bay de Ha Resort in around November. But it could happen earlier, and they'll need to do something. But they can't afford to look weak either to their domestic audience or to the regional powers.
The first Stalin chain. We've discussed it before, but this brings it into focus again. The assumption for many years has been that the way to take Taiwan is to invade it. However, there looks to be an alternative approach, but I'm not sure what it looks like. From Japan in the north to Australia and New Zealand in the south, the first island chain contains the PLA Navy from a breakout in the event of a war in the Pacific. The assumption was Taiwan would be easily overrun. However, it appears that the PLA Navy has decided to target the Philippines, or aspects of the Philippines, taking away its sovereignty and its ability to maneuver. The Filipinos do not have a navy of any substance, and I believe the Japanese have given them a couple of Coast Guard vessels, but nothing sizable, nothing to match a 7,500-ton destroyer, and the Chinese have dozens of those, I think. They build things routinely to intimidate their neighborhood. So, is the U.S. Navy capable of defending the Philippines, the Okinawa chain, Japan, and is there enough backup in Australia to maintain the first island chain, or is it already broken with this bullying in the Scarborough Shoal?
Well, no, it's not broken yet. The PLA still has trouble getting an active deployment beyond the first island chain. The Australians and the U.S. have both given, and Japan have all given security pledges to the Philippines, which in fact is politically much more acceptable in the West than giving security guarantees to the Republic of China, Taiwan. So, yes, Beijing may find it easier to undertake these intimidation operations against the Philippines at this stage, but the Philippine defenses are getting stronger and stronger. They have actually very good coastal defense anti-shipping batteries of BrahMos supersonic missiles, which could do serious damage to PLA Navy surface assets at this stage. And Vietnam has got them as well, these Indian-Russian BrahMos missiles, which could pose a serious threat to the PLA Navy. So, yes, it's going to be easier from a political point of view to just keep pulling the chain of the Filipinos, but the Filipinos themselves are gaining in strength and in confidence. They are being supported much, much more aggressively in terms of equipment by the U.S., by, as we saw, India and South Korea, and the Australians are in there as well with land-based operations in the Philippines to support the Philippine forces. So this is all showmanship right now. We still have to wait to find out what the Beijing crowd are going to attempt to explain the transition away from the Xi Jinping leadership and what the new leadership of China will look like. It'll certainly, behind the scenes, have General Zhang, Zhang Yuxie, the vice chairman of the Central Military Commission, is the man holding the gun. But how they shape the new government is going to be interesting. It could be communist, or it would be Communist Party in name, but how communist it will be and how aggressive it's going to be on the global stage is going to be very interesting, because they've run out of cash, they've run out of the ability to outmaneuver the immediate adversaries, and that includes the Republic of China and the Philippines and Japan and the United States, Australia and India, they can't do it anymore. And that's going to be determined over the next few months with Xi gone and a much more conciliatory, I believe, government, at least behind the scenes. They may still have some of the bluster of the current government, but in the fact they have nothing to back up the bluster.
Australia, Albanese re-elected. There has been talk for some time that AUKUS is under review by the Trump administration. Is Australia still certain member of the coalition that defends the First Island Chain? Are doubts about AUKUS spreading to other parts of the apparatus?
It's hard to say. I mean, there are doubts about Prime Minister Albanese's commitment to the traditional conservatism and pro-Western activity of Australia. He is openly being discussed as an asset or a puppet of Beijing, as a lot of Australian people are highly critical of that, and certainly it's something which pains President Trump. President Trump is not going to trust Prime Minister Albanese anytime soon, and particularly as the Australian government of Albanese has kept a former Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, as ambassador in Washington.
Gregory Copley is editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He is in Sydney, Australia, for the launch of his new book, Noble State. And when we come back, Noble State for the King Charles III Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.